officially running for President of the United States.
Primary consultant is myself because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
I like China. You can win against China if you're smart.
So don't tell me about China. I know China.
China. I beat the people from China. What the hell is going on?
It's time for State of the States.
Yes, indeed. And what a state the states are in.
It truly is a state of the states at the moment.
Yep, it's a bloody mess. And unfortunately, we have to move on. After a whole night of counting, the results of the US presidential election is still yet to be decided. As of now, the Democratic Party's candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden, is ahead on the electoral votes on 263, just short of the 270 required. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump only has 213 electoral votes. Even though earlier targets of winning the Republican heartlands of Florida and Texas fell through, Vice President Biden is projected to win the crucial swing states of Arizona, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and he only needs the 7 electoral votes of Nevada to reach the threshold, without even needing Pennsylvania. President Trump's path to re-election is much more difficult compared to Vice President Joe Biden's. Although he is currently leading in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia, early voting by absentee ballots could switch the lead back to Biden. And at 3 a.m. local time on Wednesday, which is last night on New Zealand time, when he was leading in Michigan and Wisconsin, President Trump claimed victory, even though there is still an enormous number of ballots to be counted, and he falsely claimed there is electoral fraud.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election. We did win this election. So our goal now is to ensure the integrity for the good of this nation. This is a very big moment. This is a major fraud in our nation. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list. Okay? It's a very sad moment. To me, this is a very sad moment. And we will win this. And we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it.
And only a couple of hours earlier today, which is Wednesday afternoon in Delaware, Vice President Joe Biden said he is on track to win the election.
And now, after a long night of counting, it's clear that we're winning enough states to reach 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency. I'm not here to declare that we've won, but I am here to report when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners. With all the votes counted, we have won Wisconsin by 20,000 votes, virtually the same margin that President Trump won that state 4 years ago. In Michigan, we lead by over 35,000 votes, and it's growing. A substantially bigger margin than President Trump won Michigan in 2016. Michigan will complete its vote soon, maybe as early as today. And I feel very good about Pennsylvania. Virtually all the remaining ballots to be counted were cast by mail. And we've been winning 78% of the votes by mail in Pennsylvania.
Firstly, I have a quick chat to Maria Almoodian about whether the outcome of this election could be contested and what happens then, and also what the tight race reflects about the priorities of the American people.
Maria Almoodian is a lecturer in American politics here at the University of Auckland.
Approaching this election, many political commentators saw it reflecting a much clearer Biden lead, and the polls saw a much clearer Biden lead. Do you see this as a result of a media bias or maybe an echo chamber here in New Zealand, or was this surprising across the board?
What I think is that we have relied heavily on experts and pollsters in the United States to gather that wisdom and that knowledge. And it's just becoming harder and harder to conduct accurate polls, given the changes both in technology and the way people are reached and the attitude about taking polls and the deliberate misleading of pollsters, in addition to just people who are a little bit embarrassed to talk about it, don't want to disclose. So there's so many aspects to the polling that make it hard to conduct today more than ever before. That includes, of course, you know, calling people on their mobile phones rather than on the landlines, which they used to do. It's harder. People don't take calls. They don't like taking calls. And you've got to have a statistical sample. It's got to be statistically random in order for it to reflect an accurate picture anyway. So I would not blame anybody for thinking that this was going to be a much clearer picture.
Now, many are saying that the tight split that we're currently seeing in this election reflects people voting for Trump who want to focus on reopening the American economy, and those voting for Biden who want to focus on COVID recovery. Do you believe this is accurate? Do you believe this is maybe too much of an oversimplification?
It is an oversimplification. There are so many different facets to this, but I also think that incumbency always has an advantage, especially in the United States. And you've really got to look at sector by sector to really understand what happened. I mean, for example, Florida, which has a sizable proportion of Latino voters that includes Cubans and Venezuelans. Well, the Democrats had thought that this time they might be able to take Florida, but Biden performed really weak among Latino voters. And that's probably partly because Donald Trump is an expert at the scare tactics and the blame frames. And he kept casting Biden into this ridiculous caricature of being a socialist. And that is something that the Cuban population and the Venezuelan population, who have fled their countries because of authoritarian leanings of their leaders, who happen to also try to run a socialist economy. So it's that kind of a thing. It's the kind of shorthand framing and the emotions that go with that that scare people and upset people. And that has been part of why Biden lost the Florida vote. And that's not going to be the same as any other state.
And so do you believe that Trump's sort of emotionally charged campaign has swung a lot of those perhaps more surprising votes?
Some of them. Some of them. You know, we really have to do it.
Which would you say is similar to what we saw back in 2016?
2016 was a different race for a lot of reasons. There was no incumbency. Now we have an incumbent. There was no COVID. Now we have COVID. There was a completely different kind of Democrat candidate, although they were both long-term, really experienced political candidates. They were just vastly different in terms of personality, in terms of perception, in terms of life story. So I don't think you can compare them side by side. It's a little bit apples and oranges.
Now, Trump has been threatening to send an unfavorable result to the Supreme Court. With the now 6-3 Republican majority in the Supreme Court, do you think this could result in a flip of the election?
If you look back to the year 2000, there was an election between Al Gore and George Bush. And in that race, it came down to a few hundred votes, but there were a lot of voting irregularities in Florida, including disenfranchising black voters, many of them because they were purged from the voter rolls. based on some really strange rules. Then there were these funky sort of butterfly ballots, and people didn't quite understand what candidate they were voting for. And so Florida had done an intensive recount where they were looking at every single ballot very closely. All the while, you had people who had been identified, and I can't verify it, but some experts have tried to identify the people who were protesting the count to actually try to understand what's happening in the vote. When it continued on for a while, the Republicans sued to stop the count, and the state court in Florida ordered the count to continue, and the U.S. Supreme Court stopped the counting of the votes. Had they counted the votes, it looks like Al Gore would have been the president, a very different result. But Al Gore conceded at that point. He did not want to tear the country apart based on delegitimizing the Supreme Court, even though that vote of the Supreme Court really had no legal reasoning to speak of, that, you know, you'd have your head scratching and no precedent with which to base it on, and said that you can't use this as a precedent. So obviously that has some question marks around the partisan nature of that. I think that's what Donald Trump is hoping for, but he'd have to sue in more than one state. It doesn't come down to one state here. It doesn't look like. I mean, he's already threatening to sue Michigan. It might not go that way for him to be able to do that. I know he will try. He will try to sue. I don't know what will happen. It's so hard to say with this particular Supreme Court now. It is...
I mean, would you... Could you trust the current Supreme Court to be partisan?
Trust them to be partisan. That sounds like an oxymoron. Look, I think that there... I think Supreme Court justices do come from a particular ideological leaning. And a lot of them tend to come from specific parties, and it's become increasingly polarized over time, and increasingly partisan over time, where a lot of the justices are getting plucked from the coalition, from the presidency, and from, you know, they're really close to the party. So maybe this question is really... What you're asking is, will they make a partisan vote this time again like they did in Florida in 2000? You know, it's hard to say. I think that's what Trump was hoping for. It just depends on how far apart these tallies are in the next few days.
Now, if Trump loses this election, he's been threatening to just not leave the presidential seat. Does he reserve the right to do this, or are there sufficient powers in place to prevent this from happening?
You know, the last 4 years have been so unusual and in many ways so unpredictable that it shocks me in so many ways. I would say in the past, that would be ridiculous. Today, you know, it's still ridiculous, but who knows what shenanigans he will do. I mean, the guy just foments chaos everywhere he turns. If he loses and it comes to January, where the presidents are supposed to switch to the new winner, he is no longer the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. I suppose that's pretty meaningful if you get somebody who tries to barricade himself into the White House. I think it remains to be seen what will happen, but I don't think it will come down to that, but I don't think you should quote me on that either.
Yeah, because just quickly, what's the sort of legality around that? I think what I'm trying to say is, between now and and him actually having to give up the seat if Biden wins, is there things that he can do to maybe to legitimize him holding on to the presidency?
Not only if the lawsuits are still pending,
okay,
or if he wins one of them. There's nothing else that I know of legally, but then again, I've never seen anything like this before. You know, is there something in the you know, deep history of the United States first Congress that they can pull out and say, oh, we're going to use this statute that's never been used in the last 200 years? God, who knows?
What systems are in place to ensure that the fair counting of every vote? And are these systems too corrupt now to be trusted?
So the difficulty in this assessment is that every state has its own voting system, and the states get to run their elections in the way they see fit. Those who might get disenfranchised are able to file lawsuits, but those are long and protracted processes. So are there things in place? Look, those voters who were disenfranchised in Florida back in 2000, you know, they have been essentially disenfranchised, period, end of story. There were another set of voters in Ohio in the following election that people still raise eyebrows around. And so this type of thing has been duplicated in a few different states where it's just become really onerous to vote, really difficult to vote, or any question at all about the person's eligibility becomes another barrier to voting. So I would say the systems are not protected enough at this point. Democracy is not protected enough. But what I think is really a positive thing is that people went out and voted in droves this time. They risked. They went out. They stood in line. Or they checked to see where they needed to go. And this is a real testament to determination of people to make this democracy more meaningful.
That was Maria Amudian of the University of Auckland, and we just have received a text saying, by losing the election, Trump will take his first steps towards making America great again. Moving on to what America looks like on the international stage, Anika.
So next up, I talk to Stephen Hoadley, Associate Professor of Politics and International Relations here at the University of Auckland. So we mainly have a chat on what America's foreign policy is set to look like if either candidate wins, and also what this means for New Zealand's relationship with the States.
Many commentators are saying that the tight split of this election reflects Americans who are voting for Trump wanting to focus on reopening the economy, and those voting for Biden who want to focus on COVID recovery. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is perhaps somewhat accurate, or maybe too much of an oversimplification?
Well, as a simplification, it's a perfectly reasonable one to start with, and then you can build nuances into it. The Biden campaign would say, look, we want to open the economy too, but the root is to first control the virus, and then we can reopen the economy like New Zealand has done, aside from overseas tourism and students. This is a solid base on which to build the recovery, whereas the Trump people and the Republican governors of various states, they want to go straight to reopening and just sort of take the consequences of the coronavirus the way Trump has done, and shrug them off and say, well, look, it didn't affect me too much, and we got good care, and we're healthy again, and why worry? So it is two different philosophies of public health and how to approach the opening of the economy, which everybody wants to do.
Currently, Trump is suing to halt ballot counting in Pennsylvania and Michigan. Is he legally justified in doing so?
He's justified in filing a case. The lawyers I've heard commenting have indicated that there isn't much of a case there. He's alleging fraud, but there is no evidence. He's alleging that this is somehow improper, but he's not saying exactly how. The problem he has is that everyone agrees, even Republicans agree, that a vote that is cast either by mail or an early vote or an in-person vote by the close of election day must be counted. Now, Trump is arguing the opposite. He's saying that the ballots received after Election Day, even though they were cast on before Election Day, should not be counted. Now, I don't think any responsible judge or lawyer will sustain that argument. The lawyers, of course, will put forward the argument. That's the job of lawyers, is to advocate for their clients. They may not in their hearts believe it, but they will happily take their fee, and they will do the best they can for their client, the Republican National Committee and the Trump campaign organization. But I don't see that they have, unless there's a very small number alleged of slight irregularities in Pittsburgh, for example, which won't really change the outcome. I don't see that these suits are going to be anything more than a big nuisance for everyone. They're going to delay the final result of the election. I think they will discredit the Republicans as clinging to straws and making mischief where there is no substance to what they're claiming. And that's where we are going to end up in the courts, rather than a nice, clear result determined by the American people.
And in a similar vein, Trump has also filed a lawsuit for a recount of Wisconsin. Back in the day, we saw a Florida recount flip the Bush election. Do you think that it is likely we see something similar here with such a tight margin?
Yes, that parallel has been put forward, and the circumstances are quite different. The governor of Wisconsin, who is a Republican, has said, look, we did do a recount in 2016. Mm-hmm. It changed a couple of hundred votes. Well, Biden's margin is far greater than that. So even the Republican governor is not holding out much hope that a substantial change would be found by a recount. So I think the Democrats can be reasonably confident that, yes, a recount will take place. It's legal. It's with the Trump campaign is quite within its rights. It is written into Wisconsin law, if there's a close election, that they would automatically do it anyway without any prompting from the Trump organization. But I don't predict that it's going to change the outcome.
In terms of recounts, do they hold a significant risk of vote tampering?
No, I don't see it. This has been alleged. It is part of the misinformation campaign. Some of it comes from Russia. A lot of it comes from the mouth of Donald Trump. But I guess I would say, show us some evidence. Show us some fraud or some other evidence that there is irregularity. We've had a succession of very able, very articulate secretaries of state from various states, including Pennsylvania, who have come on television and have explained their processes that are robust. They are have tested over time, that all the people are sincere and committed. They're nonpartisan, and they want to see a clean and credible result. And it gives me confidence that the process is being followed, that these allegations without foundation and without examples should be dismissed as political posturing, wishful thinking, or grasping at straws. Again, I think these allegations discredit the Trump Trump campaign organization and the Republican National Committee. They people will, or some people, I will see this as a discreditable political maneuver rather than a serious political or legal argument.
Moving on to foreign policy, do you believe that a Trump win will see the country become increasingly isolated, and could a Biden win perhaps see the country re-enter the Paris Climate Agreement and just, like, in general, refocus on international relations?
Yes, to all of those, Anika. My view is that the Trump administration, and I've got figures to prove it in the Pew International polls that have been taken. If you look at the polls, we find that the Clinton administration had maybe 60, 70% approval rating. They went down to around 20% under President George W. Bush. They went back up to around 60% approval under the Obama administration, and back down to 20% under the Trump administration. And I would anticipate that that international opinion will recover and go back up over 50% under a Biden administration. Yes, Biden has pledged to rejoin the Paris Peace Accord, to perhaps the Iranian Nuclear Restraint Accord, the World Health Organization, to nominate a representative for the World Trade Organization. And I expect that Biden, who of course worked with Obama, and Obama was an internationalist president, Biden will pretty much follow the Obama precedent and try to restore America's activism and cooperation with international partners. A Trump administration, well, we'd see more of the same: withdrawal, turning inwards, selfishness, rubbishing of former allies and friends like Canada, Germany. So I'm very pleased to see that the trends so far look as if Joe Biden will be the next president. The big question comes: what kind of mischief will Donald Trump get up to between now and the 20th of January? Will he fire off executive orders that will be disruptive, that will allow oil exploration to invade national parks, for example, that will speed up fracking, that will speed up the wall and take money away from other public projects? Will he pardon criminals, friends and allies who are now in jail? Will he make outrageous statements that will further alienate United States partners? And these are because he's somewhat of a loose cannon now. If he has nothing to lose, he may do desperate things just to make a point that he's an active person, which he is, and that he's going to assert the power of the presidency right up till the last day, but in ways which will disrupt, make Biden's life more difficult, will further discredit the institutions such as the FBI and the CIA and the various other institutions of government that are designed to regularize and restrain rogue presidents. So this is, I think, we're entering into a dangerous period, not to mention, of course, mobilizing militia, violence in the streets. Well, we hope that won't happen. But even without violence, the potential for disruption of the American political process and the institutions of the United States, disruption by presidential interference, the potential is quite high that this will happen.
What will an outcome either way mean for our relations with the U.S. here in New Zealand?
Fortunately, Donald Trump has not opened fire on New Zealand. He's made a few snide remarks about the coronavirus resurgence as if he was doing better than New Zealand. Well, we can dismiss that as ill-informed nonsense or sour grapes. But by and large, the relationship with the United States has been reasonably good. The security relationship is okay. The trade talks are going ahead a little bit too slowly for New Zealand's taste, but they are going ahead. And the U.S. ambassador down here, Scott Brown, has proved to be a fairly amenable character. He hasn't said anything that's upset anyone, and he'll be leaving soon to take up another post elsewhere. So the relationship is stable. And
so would you say that we're on fairly neutral ground either way?
Yeah, neutral. I think that's probably a good word, neutral. We're not America's best friend, but we're certainly not like Canada, who was highly criticized by Trump, the Prime Minister of Canada. Trudeau was personally attacked by Trump. Well, nothing like that has happened with New Zealand. So fortunately, we're a quiet, well-behaved and discreet country that hasn't attracted Trump's attention. And the middle-ranking officials are dealing with our officials.